And that's who the Lord of the Donk was. It's October 14th, 2009.
And this is Idle Thumbs 47. And I'm Chris Remo.
And I'm Nick Brecken.
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
Cool.
Yes, we're here to talk about video games on the Idle Thumbs podcast.
Yep. Brutal Legend came out yesterday.
And we've been playing it. Yeah. I don't know if Nick has.
Nope.
You tried.
I did try. It was all sold out.
Yeah. You didn't pre-order.
Tim Schafer came in there the night before and bought all of the copies.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Oh, you went to the Powell Street game?
Yeah, I did. I went to the,
Before that, there was the rap party for Brutal Legend, and I met Tim Schafer's parents there.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. I met his parents at the Psychonauts party, I think.
I think I saw them there, but I didn't meet them at the time.
I think he told them that I controlled the internet.
Nice. That's a good role to have, I guess.
Yeah.
Probably keeps you busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that you had time to play Brutal Legend.
Even while... That's why you don't play video games.
I'm too busy controlling the internet. Yeah. I'm controlling what Tim Schafer's parents see on the internet.
That's way weirder.
Yeah.
That's... Cool.
Not awkward.
Yeah. Anyway. I did play through Brutal Legend this weekend.
And I played through a chunk of it.
Yeah.
What'd you guys think?
I really liked it.
Yeah.
It's cool.
It's been interesting to see the reaction to this game because it's already oddly polarizing.
Divisive,
or at least
yes.
Mixed. Yeah, divisive, yeah. Certainly.
I saw a lot of opinions that were... the first half of this game was great, classic Schafer, and then the second half was like a completely different game that was designed by somebody else.
Really?
That seemed to be a common thread of
That's
the stuff that I skimmed in 5 minutes.
What's the first half of the game? Like, where does that break down? Because
I don't know if it was the first half, but there was this...
The first, like, maybe couple hours of the game, if you wander around a little bit, is the like the super linear part where it almost plays out like the first part of Psychonauts, where you get in the world,
right.
Go through like the three mandatory tutorial levels to sort of amass skills.
That and maybe then, what they were referring to.
And that's all, like, it's a lot of cutscenes, it's a lot of really specific one-off moments, but then it seems like the game opens up at that point, and it's more about the battles, like the few that I did after that, I haven't played it, became all about like sort of troop management and sort of open sort of like wide arena troop combat.
Yeah, sort of. All of the kind
is it
of
not like that?
Well, the major battles, so there, you know, a lot of people have been I've noticed today, particularly on forums and things like that, I've been talking about the RTS aspect of the game and whether or not the game is actually an RTS game and whether its primary focus is on multiplayer RTS and it's not really. There are actually only I'm sure I'm off by a couple, but about half a dozen or so RTS battles, like actual real ones where you're controlling your army versus an enemy army.
So it's sort of you go into the sort of dungeons to do the like more just choppy stuff, and then once you accumulate troops,
there aren't really dungeons.
Because the first three things are pretty much, I guess they're not really, it's just you go and slice some dudes.
Yeah, most parts it just goes into just sort of a little area where you kill a bunch of guys, but it's just drawn from the world map. The screen does a little fade in, fade out, but you're still, it's, you know,
I guess that's true, yeah.
A sort of instance of the world map itself. It's weird because I don't like talking too much about the missions of this game, just because honestly, the side missions, the stuff in between the RDS stuff, it's not really that strong. The main strength of Brutal Legend really is just driving around the world and existing in this world.
It is amazingly fun.
Yeah.
Just being in that car and blasting metal and going off jumps while looking at the crazy, like, Stonehenge of, like, rockers or the Mount Rushmore thing or whatever. So good.
Yeah. It's really breathtakingly awesome.
There's a couple of the optional side quests that are races, and they've been by far my favorite thing. Just where you race those crazy... like hot rod demon guys.
It's one
basically.
Dude, yeah.
Is it the same guy? It's the
same guy
okay.
Each time, yeah. And you progressively shame him further. I haven't beat them all yet, so I don't know if anything happens. There's a surprising amount of side content in this game, a huge amount, in fact, maybe too much, because it all follows the same formula. You know, I mean, you've got the racing mission, and they're all different.
Right.
They're all different courses, but you're racing the same way each time against the same dude. And then you've got missions where you go and just small little pitch battle where you just kill a bunch of guys with your axe. You've got missions that are, your car goes up on a turret and you shoot a bunch of guys in a turret. So, you know, Nick's favorite, I call it.
Oh, yeah. Sounds great.
Brecken's Delight.
Yeah.
I think the name of that mission, Shane.
Yeah.
But, you know, within each of those archetypes, they're all basically the same thing, just in a different place.
Yeah.
And so it gets a little, you know, you stop really caring after a certain point, especially because there's enough stuff out in the world to find without having to do a side mission that can level you up.
And getting up and looking at the vista points and stuff like that.
Right.
Like,
all these little things embedded in the world, right? You can go out and look through these skull binoculars that just show you a really awesome point of view in the landscape, and then you get upgrade points for that. And then if you find these dragons that have been ensnared in crazy S&M gear and set them free, these stone dragons, you get points for that. And if you uncover these ancient relics that tell the story of the mythology of this world, you get to watch a really cool 2D animated storyboard animated mythological tale. You get points for that, and so there didn't really seem to me a lot of need to actually do a lot of the boring side missions. You can get a surprising amount of mileage out of just driving around the world and being in this amazingly well realized world, which really is
it's good that there's
by
so much
far
stuff,
the best part of the game. Yeah,
that's Tim Schafer's games are always good at super cool worlds, and it's great. I mean, Psychonauts sort of started down that path where there's the sort of storylines of the campground kids that are progressing over it, and you can poke around at stuff, but this game is just pretty much right around, like, poke as far as you possibly can into a Tim Schafer world. There are no load screens. Like,
right.
It's just, it's good.
It's really cool. And
until you run into a tree and then the collision detection bananas. But
it's got that problem many games have,
yeah,
which can get really irritating.
This wasn't really built as a vehicular-focused game, even though you drive in it more than... No.
Yeah. But just driving around the vehicle is cool. I'm not familiar with the majority of, well, I don't know if a majority, I've heard a lot of these songs, but I'm not familiar with many of the artists in a particularly deep way. I'm not a metalhead or anything, and it's probably not music I would listen to just on my own time, but right. It's pretty goddamn badass in the context of this game.
Yeah, every track is pretty enjoyable. It's kind of the opposite of, but on the surface, similar to, like, the Burnout soundtrack, where it's just like, this is just right. blaring electric guitar forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Burnout soundtracks make you want to throw your console through a window.
Right.
And Brutal Legend makes you actually want to just turn up your sound system, even though it's not really music that you like. Like, I'm not a big metal fan. I don't know. But, yeah.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome. It's almost the GTA of weird hypothetical... ancient epic heavy metal landscapes, like, you know, when you play like a GTA game, GTA 3 on the way the soundtrack is constructed, it's sort of, you know, it's intended to be like, these are all the musical cultural artifacts of this time and
representative
setting
of that setting.
Sort of, you know, you can take it a little further and say this is, you know, this world, be it Vice City or Liberty City or whatever, this music is a result of this world.
Right.
Even though the cities are fictional, they're intended to represent like the urban environment from which this music
this
sprang.
Real place. This is exactly what these people would be listening to on the radio.
Well, and furthermore, this is like the hypothetical landscape from which this music sprang. You know, it's obviously completely made up and completely fictional, but it does fit in a really, really seamless way that most game soundtracks don't, which is really interesting because it's obviously an entirely licensed soundtrack.
Yep.
I don't know. It's a rare feat. Like there are a lot of things to criticize about this game for sure. The RTS stuff, when it does come up, is sort of weird. Like it does get a little tricky, especially later in the game.
Okay. I've only done the first one, but I actually really liked it a lot. I'm looking forward to
I liked it, but I know a lot of people are going to be put off by the fact that the game was not sold that way. And I think people will...
I've already seen
a lot of reactions from people who are learning that stuff's in there for the first time now that the game's coming out.
This isn't just God of War, but with jokes and crazy art style?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
But if you're anticipating it, it's I don't know. I mean, I haven't gotten far enough in to understand a whole lot about how the mechanics worked, but I really liked just yelling commands to the guy up on the stage who's spawning troops and you know, building towers and throwing guys at people and stuff. It was
So that stuff is in the single player.
Yeah. Event.
Oh, okay. Because that, I mean, that's
what we're talking about. That there's Chris.
Oh, see, you're one of the people being currently surprised.
Well, no, I mean, I knew that there was, you know, some of it. But no, I mean, I knew that some of that stuff was in the single player. I didn't realize that the stage.
You thought it was more just within the world.
Well, I thought you pick up guys.
It's like, actually in this world. That's sort of how, like, large like open combat occurs. Is that you build a stage and you build the fan towers, then you start sending units out.
Okay, so you're building basically what already exists at the beginning of a multiplayer level.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really have to, at least in the first one, you don't have to build
Well, no,
stage.
You still have to do this stuff in a multiplayer game. Like, your stage exists at the beginning, but you still have to build the fan towers on top of the fan
guys. Yeah, fans, I mean, and build the merch booths.
Yeah, there's only one nod at all towards base building, and it's just building your resource points. But that's it. I mean, there's no, like, actual base building, so to speak, or anything like that.
Right. Okay.
But, I mean, in the single-player game, they basically work like control nodes. Like, you sort of just grab them on your way to getting to the enemy base. Again, the last few missions got a little tougher and the enemy gets a little more aggressive, but for the most part, you're just kind of marching, like amassing this force and pushing this wave further and further towards the enemy. It's the kind of thing where I never really learned in any great amount of detail what every unit does or how strong each one is or whatever. I pretty much just tried to build whatever I didn't currently already have. Which I think was the right route to go. Just, like, it doesn't require you to be
the just sort of feel of it, though, from a presentation standpoint, really gets across. Like, even just I like I said, I've only played the first battle because I'm lame. Video games, Rodkin, but it's just the fact that you're doing those actions and sending people around, and then they kind of like Pikmin just do their business while you do other stuff.
Yeah,
makes it feel a lot like you're in control of an army and like you are actually fighting in a large battle thingy.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, I mean, they could have easily just made all that stuff be ambient.
Yeah.
And like,
well, that's
you just have a channel that you fight in, hewing guys, running them through and stuff until you get the end. Or they'd be NPCs who are just like firing arrows on loop. But it's nice that even if it's not the deepest mechanic, that it's there.
It's not a full-fledged skirmish, though, right? I mean, there's no push back, or
There is.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there's less of it towards the beginning of the game.
Okay,
but towards the last couple of battles, I mean, the enemy will push you back.
They can take over the fan, the resource towers, and you've got to go back the other direction and stuff.
Okay, so it is basically what they said, which is sort of like a training ground for multiplayer.
Right. Although I've seen some people say, "Oh, so the single player is training for the multiplayer, which is the main portion of the game," which is not at all the case.
Right.
I mean, that's this. Yeah.
It functions as that, but it's not intended.
That's
to be
one of the things
specific,
it does, but that's not
primary.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Especially since the RTS stuff, at least for me, and I assume for most people, because there really are a limited number of those battles. I mean, it's a minority of how you spend your time in the game.
Okay.
I mean, the overwhelming majority of time for me was just driving around the world, which was the most enjoyable part for me. And since it can actually contribute to your character progression, it's kind of okay. You go and get Ozzy Osbourne to, you know, give you upgrades and bust up your, you know, upgrade your car and do all that crazy crap.
That's cool.
It's pretty awesome. All the metal cameos are pretty hilarious. It's like anytime there's someone who doesn't sound like an actual trained voice actor, it's pretty much like you know, crazy metal guy sort of stumbling through these lines.
Right.
But I like it because, oddly, even though it sounds completely at odds with the other clearly professional voice actors, it is weirdly authentic. Like Lemmy from Motorhead is the sort of healing bassist character.
Yeah.
And he's got the most...
All right, that sounds pretty cute.
Yeah, he's got the most just like unanimated attitude, but also... I don't know. That's probably pretty much how that guy talks.
Yeah, right. Like,
I don't know.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it was good. I liked it. The only thing I don't like about all that stuff is when, because it's a video game, sometimes Schaefer has to invent, I think, metaphors that are way too direct and way too kind of lame. The thing I like about all the metaphor in this game is when it's just out there in the world and it just is what it is. You know, you see these huge statues of these metal gods, or you see these, you know, all the crazy, like chrome, exhaust tubing, like twisted into trees and all these shapes. And I love all that stuff. It leaves a lot to your imagination. But then when they start going like, and Lemmy's your, well, you don't call him Lemmy in the game, but the Killmaster, that character's name, he's the bassist and bass notes heal you. And like the fan geyser is your resource point. Right. And like, I know why that is the case. It's because they need you to actually interact with this stuff in a way where you understand what's happening. Mm-hmm. But it does kind of necessarily, I think, detract from, to me, the cooler metaphor, which is the pure imagery of the thing,
right?
Which is when you just look out at this landscape and you just see this incredible vista that could be a crazy 80s heavy metal album cover. Which,
yeah, you just get that without anyone having to tell you anything.
Exactly.
That's really cool.
And that is so successfully done. I mean, that really is,
it does make you want to get through the game just so you can drive around and see every weird little thing that is in the range. Which is nice.
It's not the kind of thing that usually I think we would recommend a game for, but it's so uncommonly well done in this game that I'm really, really kind of surprised, actually.
We were all a little bit dubious of them pulling that off correctly, because I know that's something that Tim has been talking up about this game since it was announced.
Yeah.
But in those early videos, it's just like, well, this looks... Actually playing the game and having the camera fly past all that stuff, it's there and it's really cool.
Weirdly enough, the little automated vistas, when you actually go up and interact with the little binoculars, the views that those give you are almost never as cool as when you actually just sort of drive around and find your own angle.
They show off stuff that you might not see in full clarity, but discovering that stuff for yourself and just like by weird happenstance, the camera swings up and just like composes in front of your eyes.
Exactly.
A sweet album cover. It's like, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there an element of World of Warcraft to this?
In the sense of the side missions being really formulaic, for sure.
And the best part being just walking around the world. I mean, watching the videos and stuff early on, I got a feeling that might have been an influence in it. From your description of it, sounds like...
I thought about
like,
that. I was playing this game and it's just like, they could never make an MMO of this, but if they could pull off this level of insanity for a world as big as WoW. I would play that. Fuck, I'd play that game.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. I wouldn't actually level up beyond the ability to walk somewhere without being killed.
Well, no, I mean, for sure. I mean, I played World of Warcraft for a few months until I just got really tired of it, but I don't really regret the few months I did play it because I got so much enjoyment out of exploring that world and just walking around. And Brutal Legend is kind of like that, but I think looks way cool. I mean, it's sort of up a notch from that. It's more focused and it's more imaginative.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's like a world that you just won't see in any other game or movie or whatever. I mean, it's just, it's really, really, really well made in that respect, you know, in that particular respect. And that's enough of one that I'm pretty comfortable recommending the game because I think it's that part is so strong.
Yeah.
But one other thing actually that reminded me of World of Warcraft. This is more of a specific thing, but you know in World of Warcraft where you walk between zones and the lighting abruptly shifts?
Yeah.
You know, like it just...
The shaders
change. There's a gradient that goes smoothly into... Yeah, Brutal Legend has... I mean, a lot of games do that, but Brutal Legend, like World of Warcraft, does it really overtly.
Mm-hmm.
And I, for some reason, love that stuff. Mm. Like, as you start walking into the crazy swamp with the twisted trees, you know, suddenly this sort of purple
the full screen color blending just goes...
Yeah, the saturation goes down.
Destiny is doing that, too.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And I, as in World of Warcraft, I loved in Brutal Legend finding those
points. Just walking back and forth.
And like walking back and forth and being like, God, this looks cool.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. I love stuff like that.
Yeah. Sometimes it is obvious, but it's really fun. Like up in the, where Lemmy is at the top of the mountain, if you look back around off the cliff, it's all super foggy. But then if you walk up to the very edge, it hits a trigger point where all the fog fades away and the vista opens up and you can just see for like 4 miles. Sweet.
Yeah.
One thing about the game that actually really frustrated me a huge amount is that I don't think the mix is very good.
No, I agree.
And there seem to be weird issues with characters talking over themselves.
Specifically speech, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've been running into places here and there where just the music is just like blaring at full volume like you want, and then some shift in game state will change. Like it'll go into a cutscene and come back, and then the music will be like reduced in volume.
Oh, yeah.
Or like
I know something
maybe
demo.
Triggered or something. And there are times when Like Jack Black will be just giving a sort of in-world barks, like attack sounds, you know, while slicing a guy. And at the same time, he's also talking, like having a conversation with Ophelia about plot events.
It's that kind of stuff is all over the place. I think, that's probably down to Schaefer wanting to just write dialogue for every single conceivable instance, which is on the one hand is really cool because the dialogue in this game, by the way, this game isn't really about jokes, which is like a common misconception, I think. Like there's a lot of funny stuff in it, and it's not a serious game, but it's not like a laugh riot, and it's not really supposed to be.
The strength of the dialogue, it's tonally a lot more downplayed.
Yeah, the strength of the dialogue to me is just that the people talking actually sound like humans, like they interact in a way that people actually interact with each other, instead of most video games where they sound like bad television actors. Like you know, it's really nice.
The dialogue and voice direction are great.
Yeah, but there are a lot of jokes stuck into all of the little. Just moments where you select a menu item or you have like a little binary choice when you're talking to a character, things like that. And I think Schaefer was unwilling to ever not have a clever thing said that a lot of times that shit overlaps.
I wish the game would have been smart enough to do a roll to choose which one you get. Because what it felt like is that there were just two levels of dialogue running at a time. There was the sort of narrative stuff and then there was the incidental stuff. And they didn't seem to be aware of each other sometimes.
Yeah, right.
Which is a bummer. But... I noticed that a lot at the beginning of the game, because I think, especially in the tutorial segment, which is the demo, it's packed really dense.
It really is.
And that got better over the course of the game.
It does improve,
I played, just because I think they felt less desire to be, like, punching you in the face 1,000 times, the Jack Black talking about everything.
Yeah.
We're probably getting done with Brutal Legend.
Yeah.
I do want to say the main menu is amazing.
Oh, God.
It blew my mind.
Oh, yeah, it really is.
Oh, man. It's a full motion video
people
segment.
Probably,
seen it in the demo, but there's more. It starts out with Jack Black finding the Brutal Legend LP in a record store, which is a spoiler. Sorry.
Yeah, what?
I love it. I don't know. My mind exploded when I saw that menu. And also the way that Lord Lion White or whatever moves himself around is the best.
Oh, with his hair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say. Sorry to end with two spoilers.
I like this spoiler thing. I don't have anything interesting to say. I'm just going to say it and then spoil it.
I don't know. It's rare that the main menu of a game immediately makes me happy that I'm playing that game.
Yeah.
And seeing Jack Black's hands set down the Brutal Legend LP and then open it and have that crazy painting on the inside of the album artwork.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Good.
It's really nice.
Way to go, those guys.
Yep.
Sorry.
That's okay.
My apologies.
You're forgiven.
For liking a thing.
How dare you? You're not even supposed to play video games.
Yeah. You just play menus.
Yes, there's more after...
Menus
I couldn't get the continue screen to unlock. It seemed stuck. It wouldn't let me
That's the battle you were talking about.
Yeah.
Play the first battle.
Yeah. I pressed the new game thing in hopes that I could unlock the continue button.
Did you get there?
It worked. Yeah. It was
good.
Oh,
man. Good job. Sweet.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you tried to buy this, right, Nick?
I did try.
They didn't have any.
No.
I had an experience this week. Just going off of these sort of like, we only have enough for pre-orders.
Yeah.
I cannot fucking reiterate enough how sick I am of the way... GameSpot or GameStop, whoever they are. You know, that store with the games in them. How they handle this shit. Like, have any of you guys played Demon's Souls?
No.
I was not really aware of this game until
the internet
exploded. Yeah.
Demon's Souls!
Right. And then I started talking to people about it, and I'm like, wow, that sounds really cool. It sounds kind of like Diablo, but really super hardcore and also different. Like, whatever. I can't talk about it yet because I haven't really played it. But I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go buy this from the store. And of course, I go to because the closest place to get a game on the way back from my job is a GameStop. There's one literally like on the way home for me.
Yep.
And so I go there and I'm like, oh, do you have this game? Like, did you pre-order it? No,
it's Demon's Souls.
And of course, they couldn't sell me the goddamn thing. So I can't talk about it this week, but
yeah.
People keep asking me if I've played it. So I ordered it online the other day. So next week.
You would think that someone at GameStop Corporate would just go on the internet and search for, quote, did you pre-order it? and then find out how many of them ended with, and then I walked out of the store.
Right.
There's got to be like a 5 or 6 digit number of that at this point. Like there have to be like tens to hundreds of thousands of sales over the last like, in the 2000s basically.
Yeah.
That have been lost from like, I don't know.
Well, yeah, because you can't buy it there.
Like, I've said this before, but it extends even to things like Mario games.
Yeah. I mean, isn't the issue, though, that, I mean, the stores themselves, I mean, there are too many GameStops to where they can't stock them up, right? I mean, is that the issue? I mean,
are there that many more GameStops than there are Best Buys?
I think so.
Probably. I mean, there's like 4 GameStops in San Francisco. There's only 1 or 2 Best Buys, I think.
I mean, I just feel like these stores are probably operating on such a, I mean, they're probably reluctant to stock a million games in each store.
They actually stocked new games instead of nothing but used games. Yeah, I know. Exactly. They probably wouldn't have that problem as much.
Yeah,
but
I mean, it's anyway, I'm not saying anything.
No, I know. You're right. It's still frustrating, though.
It's really frustrating.
Their business model is terrible. If you actually want to play a game,
I wouldn't buy anything there if they weren't so convenient. Which I mean, I guess is part of their strength. Well, they have a million of those goddamn stores. They're everywhere.
I wouldn't buy things from them if it just wasn't so convenient.
Well, no, but I mean,
meanwhile, like,
I love GameStop.
Huge leather bound chair turns and sort of cigars put out. Good.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Well, if there were another place to buy a video game in downtown San Francisco, I would do it.
I would too. Yeah, they closed the only other place.
Yeah. Oh, the Virgin Megastore.
Yeah.
Lame.
Yep.
Anyway, Demon's Souls. I'm really curious about that game at this point.
Too.
I'm really looking forward to playing it. That and then Risen, which was another game that I was not really aware was coming out.
Yeah.
And I saw
some Valve people on Steam playing that, and I went,
It's Piranha Bytes. It's the guys who made the Gothic games, which I'd never really played, honestly.
I hadn't either. And Risen, from what I'd seen of Risen, it didn't really pique my interest, but it seems.
Well, same here. And but I've been reading a lot of stuff about it that sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
Some guy said it's basically about an island full of assholes who just engage in all these like crazy underhanded dealings, and you are shipwrecked on this island like you are in many RPGs, but then you become part of this ecosystem sort of. And I again haven't played it. Well, no, I have played it for a couple hours, but I'm still in that early part of sort of European PC RPGs where it's horrible at first, like when you're going through all the linear stuff, when they're trying to teach you how to play the game before they actually get into what's interesting about the game.
Yeah.
And it's,
learn the program.
Right.
Yeah.
That stuff is never fun.
But also it's necessary to get a game experience like that out of a game. So.
I know, but there are some games that do it better, but the resources in games like this usually go towards other areas, other systems that are more important to the game overall. But I think that stuff is dangerous from a first impression standpoint.
Yeah.
But whatever. I'll play more of it.
That'll
be cool.
Yeah.
On a less, enthusiastic note, maybe, Nick.
Nick, you checked out
Left 4 Dead 2. Yeah, no, Left 4 Dead 2 was great.
Oh, new Super Mario Bros.
Played new Left 4 Dead 2. Okay.
Yeah,
that's what I was talking about.
There's a new scavenge mode that I checked out last week.
What is that?
It's interesting. It's basically comparable to survival in the sense that it's a timed thing.
Okay.
Except the timer's going down on this one. You get 120 seconds. You play as either the survivor or the infected side. It's both. As opposed to survival.
So it's like versus. There are people playing
it's
both
like versus.
At the same
it, it
time?
It is like a combination of survival and versus.
But you're scavenging?
You're scavenging for gas cans. There are 20 gas cans in a sort of arena map. Like the map is just... the hotel map that we played at
E3? Yeah.
Or the hotel area, rather.
At PAX, really.
PAX, sorry. As if anybody else knows what we're talking about. They just basically blocked off that section, and it functions like a Counter-Strike map or something. You can just walk around the whole thing. There are 20 gas cans that spawn. I think they're random. I'm pretty sure.
Why are you collecting gas cans?
Well, there's a generator in the center.
I'll tell you.
There's a generator in the center of the map. Actually, in that particular map, it's in the bottom of the pool.
I was about to say. Is it in the bottom of the pool?
Yeah, it's in the bottom of the pool.
Good to know.
And you start out at the pool. You have 120 seconds, and it ticks down. And every gas can that you grab, you have to grab the can and then run to the generator and then hold E, and there's like a 3-second timer.
Yes,
in good old E. and you fill up the tank, and it adds 20 seconds to the timer.
Oh, okay, I see.
So
the idea is to last as long as you possibly
can. Last as long as you can, and You know, there are a lot
of
good. Yeah, it is good. It's
that also that's a really good like zombie narrative thing as well.
Yeah.
Like
yes. Yeah. Yep. It's
do the lights go out at the end? What are you keeping alive with the generator?
Yeah, I think they do go out. Yeah.
Be better, because that would be the best.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because the finale sections in Left 4 Dead are sort of on a timer.
Right.
But this is one where it's a little bit.
Feed the generator and live as long as you can. You will inevitably not live.
Right.
And the object.
Yeah, there's no, you can't sort of hide in a closet for any
duration. Yeah, no, everybody dies. Maybe unless you get all 20, or I think there's 16. Unless you get all 16, maybe you survive. I don't know, but nobody ever did that. I mean, most teams are not going to actually get them all.
Until a week in when, you know, you've got the rapist team who just marches in there and immediately saves all 16.
Cool. I mean, that seems
it's
like
really difficult.
It's nice to have sort of capture point-esque play. I mean, it sort of is, I mean, I don't know. It reminds me in style sort of the Left 4 Dead or of the TF maps, where there's just one team constantly advancing on you and you're just holding out as long as you possibly can to defend your point until you are sad.
It affords a lot of different strategies. You can split up and try and grab, the map is fairly large.
Like everyone go get a gas can until we have a 1 in 4.
Right. Chance. Or, I mean, and that's going to lead to, failure most of the time.
It's hardcore that is combined with human infected opponents. That's like a killing
floor. It's really hard. Oh man,
really,
I was playing as infected.
Extreme.
Really cool,
I was playing as infected, and the team that I was playing against decided to split up, and the one guy, the map is actually pretty huge. He went way down.
Which type of dude?
What do you mean? Which,
who are you
what
playing
I was playing as?
As?
I was playing as the jockey at the moment. But I mean, it switches. It's like versus where when you
right.
die,
yeah,
you
yeah.
respawn. But anyway, I was the jockey, and this guy's running for a gas can. Clearly just being the loner, jerk who thinks he's totally awesome.
Yeah.
He's probably on coke or something.
Actually, I think I know who it was, but anyway.
No, I mean the actual character in the game was clearly just going for a briefcase full of money that he had left out of the
woods. Oh yeah, right. And he was going up a ramp by the freeway way away from his team, and I jockeyed him and started steering him away. And I went up the freeway ramp, turned the corner, and then just started going down, like way down the freeway, just like really far away, to the point where there's
like no
way.
Human is ever supposed to survive out that far.
No, and the problem was, I don't know how, I think a common infected killed me as it was like hitting him, and so died.
Ouch.
I died, he's on the ground. And he shoots the other common infected, so now he's laying there, incapacitated, but
there's
scenario. Nothing around him at all.
So
all.
He just died.
That's an amazing zombie narrative.
Yeah,
of
no,
the guy
great.
Just completely out in the middle.
And
of
the rest of his team
the two
couldn't
zombies
possibly
fighting over you accidentally kill one of them. That's great.
And the rest of his team couldn't possibly go after him because
they
by the
just,
time they got to
killed.
Him, the
so he's just
got to
bleed out. Basically,
so he just sat there the whole time, and just as the round was ending, I was a boomer. And I marched way. It took me like a minute to march my way all the way out there. And I just sort of slowly tiptoed up to him and then just bleh, just like all over his face.
Oh man.
Nick just actually vomited for effect just now.
Yeah.
That's a sequel to last week.
Right, yeah.
So
it was really good.
Way to go creating the horrible sort of side pocket zombie movie story of the guy left alone.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Man, as the jockey, can you like jockey dude with a gas can, like right as he's about to return to the generator? Can you be Pikmin 2?
That's actually
Marble Return.
Right, Marble Bandit.
Yeah.
No.
Most of the great moments in that mode come from just a guy who's like, a split second away from filling the can, and then as a spitter you can just lay down all this acid in that whole pool. You can fill the pool up with acid.
God.
And so if the guy is sitting there and he's got like a second left, he's got to decide like, am I going to die before? I mean, the spitter is like really powerful. It's actually a really interesting class because it just means you have to basically run in terror or you're dead. But if you just fill the pool with acid, it just, confounds the other team. It's hilarious.
Nice.
It's really good.
That's cool. That sounds like a great mode.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
It should have been included in Left 4 Dead 1, though.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Now I really want Left 4 Dead 2. Thanks, Nick.
Yeah. Also, Left 4 Dead 2, they didn't confirm this officially, but we know the last two campaigns now. Did you guys see this?
I don't think so.
Oh, yeah. The posters leaked out, and then the achievements list for the 360 game... Jesus fucking Christ.
All right, so what there's that.
It's okay. It's just Pyramid Head.
All right, anyway.
That was Valve. They're going to reveal the campaigns again. Send Pyramid Head through Chris's sound system.
Well, that's fun. Anyway, it's Amal and some kind of refinery in the rain.
Oh, okay.
Which is pretty cool.
The classics, I guess.
Classics, yeah. Pretty much what you expect.
There hasn't been a mall yet, though.
No. Dead center. Prices aren't the only thing that will be slashed or something.
Oh, man. God.
Yeah.
It's fucking great.
Yep.
All right.
Cool.
So, it sounds like shit on paper. Like, there's 20 gas cans, and then you've got to do this shit. And yeah, it's but just like, huh?
It sounds the better and more new Team Fortress modes.
Yeah.
It's good that Valve might be getting good at doing sort of not long length, but sort of nice, almost sort of console-y feeling length multiplayer modes on the PC that feel really PC.
Yeah.
I don't know why we're talking about this.
It does feel really PC.
When it's technically the break.
Anyway. But interesting comments.
Yeah. I don't know. I love all the minecart stuff and King of the Hill and T4.
I forgot to mention, actually, that those gas cans can obviously explode, which is also hilarious.
Like if someone shoots it.
If someone shoots it, or I think as a spitter, if you drop a can, which when you get hit.
Oh, if you drop it into acid, it will corrode the can.
Right, and it explodes. And so just imagine that pool being spit with acid and then knocking the can out of the guy's hands and then it lights on fire. It's just, it's pretty marvelous.
Do they cascade? Presumably, if it's near flame, it would also explode.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty funny.
Think we're going to take a break?
Do it. Video games. We're back. And Nick, it's time to talk about Borderlands.
Diablo?
Oh, really? Diablo? Is that,
yeah, I played Diablo over the weekend.
You mean Diablo with guns?
No. Diablo.
Oh, okay.
The original Diablo.
Yeah, you played Diablo 1.
I played a lot of it.
Really?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
It holds up. It really holds up surprisingly well.
You can't run.
You get used to it really quickly, though.
Okay.
Yeah, it's great. It's a good game.
You were sharing some sort of story on the tweets.
It's just a butcher story. Everybody has a butcher story. But
everyone has the same butcher story, basically.
Yeah,
which is,
I opened
oh my
the
God,
door,
I
and then
pants.
I screamed and ran. Yeah. That still happens.
And then you...
But
you,
I did.
Then you were reminded that you could not quick save.
Right, yeah. There is no autosave. So if you don't actually go into the menu and hit save...
Yeah, that game was hardcore like that.
If you don't hit save and you die at the butcher, you have to start over. That was surprising. So, yeah.
Anyway.
So, yeah, we didn't play Demon's Souls, but Nick had that experience in Diablo.
Yeah, good for you. You did also play Borderlands. You're going to talk about
it. I guess
this game.
I did play Borderlands, yeah.
Yeah, you played a lot of it, actually. You played quite a lot of it.
I beat
the game.
Yeah.
Oh, God, where to start with Borderlands? Well, first of all, my sigh, last week, I don't think I really intended to convey that this game was terrible. I think I was just frustrated.
You're conveying something specific.
I am seriously frustrated by it.
Why?
And frustrated with having to form an opinion on it.
Okay. Have you managed to form it yet?
I have. I have. But I just wanted to get that out there because a lot of people were like, oh man, this game must be awful because Nick sighed.
So you formed an opinion though.
Yeah. It's awful. It's not terrible.
You're horrible.
No,
you're awful.
All right.
You're
let me just
the
talk
thing
about
that's
Borderlands.
Awful.
Borderlands.
Look, I'm going to lay it on the line here.
No, I'm going to lay it all out there. Let's talk about Borderlands after all of this.
Nick has now donned the sort of patented Jake, like California Highway Patrol glasses.
Yep.
Which means this is some serious business about to go down. It's on.
It is on.
And or you're going to take 5 minutes to articulate a point that is extremely obvious.
Wow, fucking burned.
Yeah, that's what I do. I wear the glasses, I mean.
All right.
No, you're going to be surgical with this.
Right.
But if I was trying to say it.
All right.
Just trying to surge psych you
away.
Up here.
Yeah.
Surgeon.
Okay.
That sounded weird.
So yeah, Borderlands. You know, Borderlands, I really don't know what people's expectations are for this game. I get the sense that people actually don't really know what to expect.
I think Diablo with guns.
Yeah, I mean, Diablo with guns.
Which was also what people wanted from Hellgate London.
It was, yeah.
I don't hear Hellgate London and Borderlands compared very often.
That's
because
everyone already forgot about Hellgate London.
I think out of them.
Yeah. God, you know, I mean, it's been so long since I played Hellgate. I have thought about that game in playing Borderlands, but it would be difficult for me to make a direct comparison unless I was in Korea playing Hellgate.
Is that game still live in Korea?
Only? Oh, I think right? Didn't they bring it over there? Anyway, look, Borderlands.
Look,
don't expect. Oh God, here we go again.
Don't expect deep mechanics.
Well, no. Yes. No. Look. Borderlands. It is very upfront. I think when you're in the game, the tone of the game, and what it's trying to do, it is just trying to provide some very simple genre blending, and that's it. You know, I mean, it is Diablo and Halo, and
is it actually Diablo and Halo?
Well, it does feel like Diablo and Halo in a lot of ways. The world is organized more like Diablo than anything else, I think.
What about it is Halo?
The shooting mechanics feel, I mean, you have that same sort of floaty jump.
Uh-huh.
Some of the rifles feel like Halo, like the Halo rifles, and the vehicle controls in the same way that that the Halo vehicle, although not really as finely tuned and not as satisfying as the Warthog. But that's sort of getting at what
because honestly, the thing that I associate with Halo just personally is the dynamism of the combat, and that from our discussions about Borderlands, that sounds like something Borderlands does not really have.
Well, the AI is at fault there, I think. I think if I have to point to one thing that I'm most disappointed with when it comes to Borderlands, is the AI. There are I ran into a lot of serious bugs. And I was playing a final version of the PC build. I'll get to those, but I just want to quickly say up front that, you know, I did play some co-op. I think there is, you know, I mean, you do get a more dynamic combat experience with this game in co-op.
Okay.
But the AI never really does push you to organize or strategize or do anything remotely crazy. Yeah, I mean, it really doesn't. And that is if I had to point to one major fault, shooting guys in this game. I mean, I do think the weapons themselves, you know, they are satisfying at their basic level. I mean, I think that, you know, the rocket launchers, the submachine guns, all that stuff. It is, you know, if you walk up to a guy with a rifle and you shoot him, it feels relatively satisfying. But yeah, where the problem comes in is that it's just the variety of combat and the variety of missions also. Really doesn't hold up. You're going to say something, Jake?
I don't want to just take a poop on everything here, but so the things you're describing as maybe not the most thrilling, what do you spend most of this game doing?
You spend most of this game, you know, I mean, every zone has sort of a starting area. Some of them are more hubbish than others. But you spend most of this game walking up to an NPC. When you talk to the NPC, there aren't any dialogue trees or anything like that. It instantly goes to the quest thing and then a short little text description. But it's all very, very light window dressing. There is no story to this game, really. I mean, there is, but it's so far in the background. I mean, it is a skeleton. That is not what this game is about. It's not a deep RPG at all. It is about just going through missions and shooting guys, and that's what it is. But you spend most of this game,
and that's the part that you find frustrating. Sorry, I'm just trying to work
well,
this.
Look, this I did have fun with this game at certain moments. I mean, there were chunks where I was like enjoying myself. The problem was that there were a lot of moments where I went, this is really frustrating. It's too bad that this wasn't as polished as it could have been. But you spend just to answer your question, you spend most of this game. You get the quest. Typically it's some kind of fetch quest, kill quest, your standard World of Warcraft stuff. So
it's actually Diablo meets Halo meets World of Warcraft.
Best game.
God,
ever.
Meets
yeah.
Mario 64.
meets Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
Yeah. Man, Final Fantasy, everyone in the world is gonna buy this game.
Yeah.
Borderlands
it's
is
a
like,
huge party. Everybody's meeting everybody.
Meets Mario Party. It's it's every game in one.
Yep.
meets Star Goose. Merrick Bronstein confirmed.
Yeah, America loves Star Goose, apparently. Whenever we mention that, there's a post on Twitter saying, OMG, Star Goose, I have to listen to this episode. Like,
Well, now you can put it down on the
Stargoose.
Yeah, Stargoose. Merrick. Hi, Merrick. anyway, where was I? You get a quest.
You do it.
You leave your camp. And you know, the world is arranged. There are physical gates. And there are about maybe, I don't know, 20 zones in the game. And, you know, about a third of the way through the game or something, you get to the point where you can fast travel between zones. But anyway, you go into a zone, you have a quest.
Zone link.
Yeah. You look, you know, you have a waypoint and you go to that waypoint and you either shoot the guy or you find the item or whatever. And then, you walk all the way back to the beginning because there is no town portal equivalent in this game, which is a little frustrating. And that's it. And you do that over and over and over again, and then you're at the end of the game. So
I do remember you were describing some boss battles.
Some of the quests there are.
It's my favorite thing about this game that is frustrating to me.
Yeah, and I mean,
these are some stoic bosses.
Yeah, I mean, you'll hit dungeon.
Well, I don't know, the way Nick described them, they sounded pretty goddamn stoic, a little too
just
stoic.
Just like maybe snooty.
Yeah.
A little shy.
Old shy boss.
Yeah, old shy boss. It's he's like a shy guy. The first major dungeon I hit, it was some kind of six-tiered installation with a lot of guys, and I, you know, I plowed my way through it. I get to this arena, and there's this giant sort of monster boss, and he's standing there. It looks like a World of Warcraft, the end of a World of Warcraft raid, really. And I walk up to him. I'm about midway, you know, I mean, he can clearly see me, right? And
because he waved.
Yeah, basically. I stood there.
He actually didn't. He just...
He was sort of grunting. Yeah, he was making a little grunting noise.
You were snubbed by this boss.
Yeah, I felt underappreciated. So I shot him in the face, and he didn't do anything. And so I shot him some more, and then I reloaded, and I kept shooting. And I emptied, you know, 10 clips in this fashion, and he didn't do anything. So then I pulled out my rocket launcher, and I kept firing at him. I killed him over the course of, like, 2 minutes.
You monster!
He just wanted to say hi.
He was like, just standing there.
Yeah,
he was. You just went into his house and killed him.
Yeah, maybe there was a moral comment.
Yeah, it's actually super deep.
Yeah, I had negative points. But, so, yeah, and he never did anything. And I fighting normal enemies in the game, that actually cropped up a lot. I would shoot a guy from across a huge expanse, and he wouldn't react at all until he died.
Like, yeah, even getting shot wouldn't trigger him to
right. Yeah,
start
the triggers were all messed up, and
They
were all messed up, and then there were other times when I would, you know, come around a corner, and there would just be three guys just charging at me, like, you know, just, you know, like just
making that noise,
blasting away.
it was terrible.
Yeah,
they were riding turrets.
Yeah, it was terrifying. And but they're just shooting from way, you know, like I was shooting the other guy, you know, just a role reversal. But clearly shouldn't have seen me. And
uninteresting, turning the table on typical video game.
Yeah, it made me consider. No, it didn't. It was just obnoxious. And
right before then, your guy suddenly said, 2 weeks till retirement, or, you know, seeing the new T-16 or whatever. And, and then those three guys came over and killed you. It was weird. So, yeah, I mean, Borderlands actually sort of multi-leveled sort of commentary with the boss that just sits there and lets you blow it away, and guys who rush you when you're just standing still trying to do your job.
Yeah, I mean, your character does have a sort of internal monologue going.
Does it really?
Well, it's not voiced.
It is voiced, actually.
Okay.
Usually he says things like, you weren't epic, or, you know, like things like
what?
That.
You weren't epic?
Well, I don't know what the exact phrase is. I can't quite remember.
That's a weird one to make up.
You aren't epic, I believe.
We've looked it up.
Yeah, I can't remember.
You were epic.
You could possibly have been epic.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
This is like Schrodinger's game. You could be epic.
The other thing I want to talk about, you know, are the classes. It's the kind of game where the classes don't make much of a difference. It's not like Diablo in that sense. It's very you know, the all, most of your skill points, you know, the skill trees, they're all, you know, 5% to damage or you know, 10% the, right, more
the,
or something.
The skill trees are just become better at the core competencies that you already have. Is that
yeah,
class?
Each
that,
class gets one specific ability, and I'm pretty sure that's it.
That's the kind of thing that I think was a big, and you know, it's a different game than Diablo. It's obviously not Diablo, but I remember playing Hellgate London, and you know, there was a little, I guess, more of an explicit promise with Hellgate London that it would be Diablo with guns. I mean, although I think actually Gearbox has made that comparison a few times.
Yes.
But with Hellgate London, it was like really what people wanted. And I was really disappointed because that's basically what the skills were like in that game, in Hellgate London, where, oh, okay, now I can shoot a little better. Now I'm a little more accurate. Now I'm a little tougher or whatever. And it's like, that's not...
That sucks. Well, because being able to sort of curate your character like that is what makes it a role-playing game.
Yeah.
Right.
That's and the thing. This is never, far more shooter.
Like when you're just RPG, leveling up your existing things instead of actually piecing together things to create an actual character for yourself.
I mean, in Diablo, the skill trees serve to actually change the function of your character. I mean, in a meaningful way, or like really just, if nothing else, provide you a brand new, super sweet thing to do. You know, you can fly across the screen, or you can create a big ice wall or you know, ice orb, all this crazy shit that you can do, teleport, whatever, you know, the billion trillion things. But you know, you can't wait to level, like you, in Diablo, the feeling of like, oh my God, when I get to level 18, this entire new skill tree is going to open up. This is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
And even after I've played Diablo 2 1,000 times, I still feel that. And I understand why, especially in a first-person perspective, you're limited in the number of crazy animations you can do. In a sci-fi theme, you're limited with the number of like spells type stuff you can do. But maybe that just means this combination actually isn't as cool as just fundamentally from a design standpoint. Maybe people are trying for a combination that might actually not be as synergistic as they're hoping it is.
I think that may be the case. I mean, in this game, I think when you level up, really what you're gaining access to are the weapons that have, you know, they all have level limiters.
Okay, right.
And so it's like, oh, now I can use this crazy purple a rocket launcher, which is fine.
Crazy purple rocket
man. Revolver rocket launcher.
Yeah.
I guess a lot of them are that.
You know, I was a little underwhelmed by the weapon variety too. I was expecting more crazy combinations, like the revolver rocket launcher. Didn't see, for the most part, you know, this was a sniper rifle that looks and operates and functions very much like the sniper rifle that I got at level one.
Yeah,
but it's purple.
Yeah, but it's purple and it has this statistic and that statistic.
Right.
And there are some crazier weapons, and I only did play through it once. But
sorry, that's
All right, I know, Jake. All right,
I only beat the game one time.
Yeah.
So
well, yeah. I mean, there should be more variety from right off the bat. I mean, You know, I did. It's just it's hard to get a sense for was my playthrough particularly buggy. When you know maybe other people won't get that same. Crazy.
You Nick Brecken do have a tendency to just like magnetize horrible system crippling bugs hunt you down.
Yeah, but those weren't the kind of bugs you had though, right? I mean, you're talking like design bugs. I mean, you're talking
stuff.
Yeah, this is not like my video card didn't work or something.
This dog shouldn't be running in circles. It should actually be attacking me after I shot it in the face.
You just scared the shit out of it.
About the weapons, not to belabor the Diablo comparison, but just because it is, you know, the kind of unlimited procedurally generated weapon. I mean, it is the most obvious comparison.
Yeah.
The problem is that in Diablo, for the 90% of the weapons you find, there's nothing interesting about them. Right. Mm, I mean, like if the game had to actually rest on that, it wouldn't really be interesting
or
fun.
It's true.
You know what I mean? It's nice.
A lot of the time it's like this weapon gives me something that actually boosts my ability or gives me an ability or whatever.
Or is just a good funnel through which to use your ability. Like if you're a barbarian or an Amazon or something, you know, those are just the things that allow you to bring out your abilities. But on the randomly generating a weapon, like you do get that potential where sometimes you get the crazy thing. But the problem with randomness is that just due to the nature of how probability and sort of permutations work, most of the time you're going to average out to a fairly like consistent baseline of you know, you're not going to get that. Because if they made everything crazy, it would devalue the whole thing.
It's true.
And so, you know, I think that is the problem with this kind of system is that you might have 87 billion weapons, but how many of them are interesting?
Right,
you
if they're not in service of something else.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think in terms of what people will experience with this game, I feel like it's going to, you know, weigh heavily on whether the first quest is fun for them, whether, you know, just shooting a dog and
what?
You love shooting dogs.
I mean, from my perspective, it did get better. The enemies, they don't look. The AI doesn't radically become amazing with the. I mean, and that's been said online. I can't remember who's, you know,
well, like how was say the final boss fight?
Oh, the final boss fight was actually terrible. But didn't you say
didn't you say you had a similar experience to the first boss fight where he still just sat there and let
this
you
one
plug
this
him,
one wasn't like, a bug though, this was just by design. It's just a bad
wait really he just stands fight. There by design,
he's actually just smoking a cigarette sitting
on
a park bench.
I don't
want
to spoil the final boss fight, but it does just sit there and you do shoot it and it dies and that's it, and you don't have to barely move. I mean, you
does it at
move
least
a little bit,
like zoom in on his eye and you see a little tear.
You do shoot its giant eye is what it is.
Oh, well, good one, Jake. A huge deer.
It's a purple eye.
That was randomly generated.
Can you shoot him with the purple rocket launcher?
Yeah, you can.
For bonus shenanigans.
Your purple rocket launcher has no effect on my purple eye. What are the odds?
The one out of 87 billion chance.
Yeah. It's the exact same hex color value. Right. No!
So, yeah, I mean, maybe that's enough about Borderlands. I just, you know, to wrap up...
Wait, you promised earlier before we recorded that you'd explain what the borderland is.
Oh yeah, what's a borderland?
Oh well, the borderland. You know, there are borders out there, and
in the land.
In the land, there are borders in the land. And
so you found the borderlands.
I did. I found them.
And then what happened?
Pretty
you
rudely,
actually found the land border.
I did find the land border.
Accurate.
You know, I mean, there are areas where you can just walk off a cliff and die. But that cliff...
That doesn't sound unreasonable.
There are rocks, though, that... it doesn't look like you're walking off a cliff. It looks like, oh, I can just walk over here now and go across this canyon.
Well, yeah. What it looks like is there's... You showed me a video you made of this. Mm-hmm. And what it looks like is, oh, look, like a 5-foot drop or something.
Yeah, it's about a 5-foot drop to a rock. But instead, what happens is you enter this, like,
it's a 5-foot drop to death.
Which is your death. And you go back to the start and it docks you, like, $600.
A wormhole, which is your death, and $600.
Yeah, yeah.
So it kills you and robs you.
It kills you, robs you, and leaves you in the nearest town. Like, I thought I was just going over here to kill a guy or something. It's just
you were, but the guy was you.
Yeah.
Borderlands,
oh man,
so deep.
I know. Turn it around.
Whew. Yeah.
So that's Borderland, the land of borders.
Do you recommend this game?
Do I recommend this game? I recommend. God, you know, I don't know. It's gonna depend on because look, Chris Failer likes it. My colleague at Shaq News likes the game in the sense that it's just a game where you get into it and you shoot some guys and you shoot them and you get loot, and that's the other thing about Chris Failer, he didn't play Diablo.
He actually dislikes Diablo.
Right.
We used to argue about that.
But he didn't play World of Warcraft. He's never played a game where this loot mechanic is and so to him it feels new.
We
were talking about this, and I think that's one of the reasons why he enjoys it to the degree that he does. I feel like if you are a person who has played those games, if you're a person that has played Diablo and has played Halo, this combination may not be it may not blow you away. But if you keep your expectations fairly muted, and if they fix some of these glaring, there are a lot of issues that need attention in this game. The AI is really frustrating. But you know, I mean, you still get to shoot the guys even if they are bugged. So
even if they're just standing around,
yeah, even if they're standing around, you get to blow their faces off.
Even the final boss battle was kind of like that.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil anything, but I did just stand still pretty much and shoot a guy in his weak point. And that was the boss battle.
You did massive damage.
I did.
Oh, bringing it back, 2006. Sorry. All right. Well, that's Borderlands.
Yeah.
On that excited note.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break, get some reader mail, and we'll be right back.
Reader mail.
Back again. Nels
Anderson.
Reader
mail.
Writes, hey guys, the recent discussion of Visceral's Jack the Ripper game jogged an absurd yet kind of awesome memory. Beyond the general horror and sadness that it's becoming impossible to make hyperbolic comments about the industry that won't end up coming true, Visceral's Jack the Ripper game made me think of the Take-Two adventure game Ripper from way back in 96. Any of you guys ever play this? It was cyberpunk Jack the Ripper detective mystery set in 2040. Blade Runner meets Police Knots meets Dead Space meets God of War, perhaps. It was one of those infamous FMV games like Night Trap, except it featured notable actors like Christopher Walken, Burgess Meredith, Karen Allen, John Rhys-Davies, and Paul Giamatti. Wow. I don't remember it being particularly good or bad, but I'm sure it'd be patently ridiculous if revisited now. Anyway, my mind immediately went to that when I heard of Visceral's potential game. That and the tragic realization that as absurd as Take-Two's Ripper may have been, it will soon be eclipsed. And then he has a Wikipedia link here. Did any of you guys play this? Did any of you guys even know this about this?
No.
What's the name of it again?
Ripper.
Oh, yeah.
So Visceral is one-upping them with the Ripper.
Hmm.
Yeah. There was an explosion of this kind of thing. I seem to remember in the 90s.
Yeah, I didn't play any of those.
Yeah, I didn't really either.
Oh, I played Burn Cycle. Sorry.
Okay,
Confession.
Yeah. Yeah, I missed out pretty much on that
port.
Whole... Nice. The whole FMV like segment of adventure games.
Right.
Didn't really play that stuff. This game has a ridiculous cast, though. It also apparently included Jesus. It included the hit
Jesus.
Blue...
Jesus!
Yeah, surprise! It included the hit Blue Oyster called Song Don't Fear the Reaper. Man, they're really going for it there.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, at least you don't play as the Ripper. If anyone's played this, they should send us an email. Tell us what it was like. What their projections for the head-to-head this and the Ripper will be.
It'd be great if the Ripper was just completely like wacky, like it used
slapstick?
Like the Spinal Tap song, like just completely fucking
the bizarro version,
Nasty Jack
of
or whatever. Yeah,
Ripper?
Just
it's got the music from the
Saucy Jack. That's it. Yeah.
The Team Fortress mod where you hide as frogs and chairs.
Oh man, that mod is amazing.
But yeah, that video had the best music.
Yes, it did. It was but Banjo. Tui or something?
Is that what that was?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. That cracked me up.
Yep. Gainer.
Sweet. So we got another Jack the Ripper related email here.
Oh.
Hello, Idle Thumbs. I was thinking about the Visceral Jack the Ripper game you're talking about, and while being a detective hunting down Jack the Ripper could be a cool game, detective stories have been done. What would be really interesting is if the demon-killing hero turned out to be a serial killer's warped perspective of the world, and the game hints that things are not quite right and then somehow reveals it at the end. Then it gives the player one last kill with the veil removed and the world shown as it is. The player has limited control of Jack and can either try to make him fail in pursuit of his victim or aid him and make the kill more gruesome. Thanks for a great podcast, Super Slug. That sounds like our Gordon Freeman, basically. That would actually be a genuinely interesting
if the Ripper was all of that stuff up until like the last few minutes and then just, oh shit.
Right.
Yeah. That would actually have a few things in common, I guess, with Bioshock a little bit, and then also with From Hell, the Alan Moore graphic novel I mentioned last week. Like, in a very tangential way, I mean, the idea that Jack the Ripper is doing these things in the service of, you know, some kind of warped or supernatural perception that he at least thinks he has. I don't know. That'd be a crazy game. I don't think anyone would have the balls to make that game.
Or you're Gordon Freeman.
Or, yeah.
Psychopathic killer.
Right. I'll take any game. Basically, any game where you're secretly a psychopath, apparently, is what I love.
I was sad at how immediately, hilariously, quickly Chet shot that down.
I know.
Yeah, in our interview.
He was not.
He's like, no, that's not what it is. But I think the real reason that he did that is because we were getting too close to the truth.
Oh, man.
It's true.
Yeah.
He had to shoot that one
down
immediately.
Did any of us wake up dead the next day?
No.
Oh.
But, you know.
Well, it's probably still true. All right.
I mean the truth of Half-Life Episode 3, not the truth of Chet.
Oh, I know. It's weird. We proposed.
It's not that. Oh, it's not that. No, it's not that. Just garroting wire. Oh, no.
I don't know. We proposed the idea that maybe, you know, he was secretly a sociopath. And
yeah.
He didn't respond well. It was weird. I thought it was a solid, you know. Hypothesis. Oh,
I found a copy of CGW at work under like a pile of stuff by the water cooler, and,
oh, yeah?
and it was the Half-Life aftermath cover that says a new Half-Life episode every 3 months? Question mark.
Oh, God.
I was like,
no. Yeah.
Years.
Yeah, I remember that. God.
Yeah.
All right. So, Dammy, writes, let's see, hey Thumbs.
Hey.
I was listening to you guys talk about the great games you miss playing, like Ultima Underworld. That's me right now in this current console generation. My gaming journey started with Mario and the old Game Boy. It continued through the NES, Genesis, Sega CD, Nintendo 64, GameCube, and I joined the PS2 late in the game mainly for Gran Turismo and God of War. All the while, though, I've had a soft spot for PC gaming. I remember playing the original X-Wing and TIE Fighter with a mouse and keyboard. I'm primarily a PC gamer now, and while I've missed out on the 360 and PS3, I enjoy fantastic games on my PC. He goes on for a while, talks about some of the games. I'm trying to get all my gaming in before the birth of my daughter in February. If not for those games on PC, I would have missed out a ton of experiences. So his question is, do you see the consoles ever completely taking over PC gaming platform? People have been saying PC gaming is dead for the longest time, but it does seem to just stick around. Will there ever become a day when that happens? Keep up the great podcast. Thanks, Danny.
I sort of at this point think no. I think if that ever happens, it's going to be because there's some sort of technological shift
away from desktops or something
like
that. Where
it's like desktops don't exist or consoles don't exist and everything just sort of gets integrated into some sort of
device.
Yeah, there's just
game
you have like a thing in your house that just sends content out to televisions or something. Yeah. I mean, if there's some actual shift in how people align technology in their house, then maybe, but unless that happens, I think that people are going to keep putting games out on the PC. What they are is probably going to keep changing, but yeah. I mean, every game, what games are on every system changes over time. So
yeah,
yep, yeah, that's my prediction.
I agree.
Once you've got the internet in your eyeball and you don't need a PC,
yeah, yep, yes,
sweet. Yeah, I mean, to me, I guess the way I look at it is. And I think you guys are right. I mean, I think there probably will be, probably in the relatively near future, like the, you know,
the decade or something.
Yeah, on the horizon, you know, something that does occur that does change the way content is generally presented and shared and played. But but
cloud stuff.
And sure. Yeah. And like that's sort of the
once every screen in the world can play on live, there's no need for any gaming system.
Yeah.
But to me, one of the big things is I think. You know, at least under the current, what we currently know as consoles and PCs, and I forget if I've mentioned this on the podcast, I probably have, but I think there is something that keeps the PC always there in some capacity, which is that it's not owned or controlled by a corporation that makes you certify your games and has to agree that your game can be on that service and can decide not to let you put their games on that platform and where you need to submit everything you do to approval. I think that there will always be people who either can't get through that process or object to that process or, you know, want to make games that aren't suitable to that company's idea about what a game on their system is. I think there's a possibility that like, and I think we've seen this to some degree, that big, huge budget AAA action games, due to the way they're budgeted, they can't be that wacky or weird just purely from a financial standpoint. And so those maybe sidestep that problem. Like it doesn't matter if you're making something that's too crazy for Microsoft or Sony or Nintendo to approve. If you're spending that much money because you're already
you're already
going to be on the safe side. Yep. So I don't think people making those games are ever going to sort of give up on what we currently call consoles. I think they will continue to focus more and more on consoles. I think the stuff that will continue to be on PCs is stuff that falls outside of that grain, which is where the PC has sort of currently been bolstering itself in this decade. I think like in the 90s there were a lot of the big flagship action games on PC. I think that will probably continue to be less the case, and you're more going to see a wider breadth of games on the PC, probably fewer of like big top tier exclusive high budget shenanigans. Mm-hmm. That would be my guess.
Unless it's an MMO.
Well, yeah, MMOs, the openness of networking on PC probably will keep that stuff there for a while. But yeah, I don't know. I think the stuff like just the as consoles seem to continue to approach PCs in terms of their architecture and their general like
fidelity.
Yeah, fidelity. Like I mean, I think that also ends up being a bit of a safeguard for the PC as well, just because you can make a game that basically
something can looks run on both
similar right on Xbox 360 and PC and PS3 without needing to drastically redevelop all your assets.
That said, a lot of the games that really sing on the PC still do for the same reason that they always have, which is that the controls can have a million more buttons.
Right.
And
yes.
Since you're looking at the UI from 4 inches away from your screen instead of from 10 feet,
you can have a lot of tiny buttons all over the place.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's just so, exactly.
It's funny that that stuff is like still the same, even though it's like, instead of the NES's like 200 by 200 window, a PC can do 320 by 240 or maybe 640 by 400 or whatever.
Yeah. No, it's true. That is a weird, that's scaled continually. Case. Yeah.
Even when the PC is sort of technically behind a console, like when the console generation first comes out.
Are heavily subsidized.
Yeah. When the PS3 came out, it did in some ways leapfrog what PCs were doing at that point. But at the same time, no one plays a PS3 game from 4 feet away from their huge TV, and no one plays it with precision devices like a keyboard or mouse.
Right.
And I don't know what's going to happen with that in the future.
Yeah.
When everyone has eyeball PCs and moves things around with their Minority Report gloves.
Yeah. But apparently the Natal, by the way, cannot detect fingers. Like, it can't detect finger movements. It just reads your hand as one sort of block. So there's no Minority Report going on there. I don't know. One of my coworkers had a hands-on session with it recently.
Interesting.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I don't really necessarily need that.
I don't want that.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I don't know. That's our answer, I guess. Yeah, I mean, that the stuff, Jake, you said about... that actually is possibly my favorite ongoing thing about PC gaming, actually. It's just that you do get really, really high DPI, essentially.
Well, it's just, just the play style of sitting at a desk with what are otherwise workplace peripherals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just that are designed for like complex data entry or like precision, like graphics work or that sort of things. And then using those to play a game is so much different than what is basically just someone's ripped out an arcade stick and miniaturized it.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's the most obvious thing to ever say about PC versus console gaming, but it still actually it holds true in a really interesting way.
Yeah, and some people are really repelled by that, probably for understandable reasons.
I mean,
but it is different enough that it does make the platforms
also, I mean,
their own thing.
Because largely, I think because of the 360, the wired 360 controller, gamepads on the PC have become a lot more acceptable too, which is
that's nice.
Because there was a long time where it's like, oh man, so-and-so ported this game to the PC. It's garbage. Like, who would ever... I mean, I thought of the most crass, dumb example, which is like a PC port of Madden.
They've stopped making those, I think, at this point.
Yeah, but I was a Mac gamer for a long time, which is a hilarious thing to be. Sorry. But I always remember it was it was always big news amongst the people who are really into gaming hardcore, but for some reason, like, they just owned a Mac because that was the only PC they could afford or because their parents got it for them before they went to college. And I remember when Madden was coming out for the Mac, everyone was super excited. And then it was like, what? You're going to plug in this, like, the clunky Logitech Super Nintendo controller ripoff?
Yeah.
And that's going to be... Oof.
What's the deal with third-party controllers? Why are they all seemingly garbage?
You think that someone could have a lock on the entire controller industry by hiring a good, like, one good industrial designer who has the authority to purchase good materials. You could still sell them for less than first-party controllers, probably.
Yeah.
And get a reputation as being a company that makes good stuff, where it's like, oh, it's the not Logitech or Pelican or Mad Catz brand.
right. It's the one that's good.
Yeah.
Hi, what do you
know? I mean, Logitech actually makes pretty decent stuff.
Yeah, they have made some really good stuff. That's true. But, man, it's rare to find a good...
Yeah, Mad Catz.
God.
Yeah, oh, that's always the saddest when you go to like a meetup with a bunch of friends and people bring controllers. And
the one guy's like,
I got my Mad Catz controller. Mad Catz.
That's always the bitch controller. It's like the guy
I remember that from the N64 days with GoldenEye. For me,
right,
it was always that.
The weird, like,
it was
sort of always geometric the, silver controller.
Right, with the turbo switch. Like, oh,
the see-through one, the transparent one.
Or it's made of the Power Rangers, like, silver plastic or something. You got a slow-mo switch on your N64 controller? What is this?
Yeah. Oh, sweet, I can use turbo. Oh, it doesn't do anything.
Oh, it just presses A over and over again.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So that's PC gaming.
PC gaming also had a turbo switch at one point in its life.
It did, yeah.
That would make your 486 go from 33 to 66 megahertz.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I never knew what that did. The entire time I had a computer that had that button.
I remember noticing that my frame rate in Doom would change, and that was awesome.
For whatever
reason. I've got a shitty computer. Oh, now it's a good one.
Good thing they invented this technology to make my computer good.
PCs don't have that anymore, where it's like, and now it's 1 gigahertz.
Right. Yeah. Turn off a core.
Shut down half the cores, and... Yeah. Peg the clock speed down. It'd be awesome.
That would sell a lot of PCs. Just like a gear shift.
Someone's crazy case mod.
Kick it up to 10. Yeah. Like a 5-speed turbo control.
Yeah. You've got your little like frame rate counter in the top of the
top
right.
Yeah, I can
see
the Best Buy guys selling that to some old woman. Just like, oh, wow, I didn't know that's
like
how they work.
It's like an internet speed booster. You know? Complete smoke and mirrors.
Oh, sorry. You didn't know that you could just... You got all four cores going now. What? They've all got that. They've all just got a little paddle shifter.
Yeah. Cranks the gears faster.
So Peter T. writes, "Hey Thumbs, I recently made a discovery in my vinyl record collection of one of the only video game themed songs I've seen in a commercial record, and I thought you guys would be interested in what I found. I was rummaging through my records and I found one called Looking at Girls by a local Bay Area band called The Tunes, which came out in 1982, and after looking at the track list on the back, I discovered one of the songs is titled simply Video Games. Needless to say, I was compelled to put the record on my turntable and listen to it. I don't believe this band got any national airplay, but they seem to be somewhat competent musicians. Their music is influenced by the Beach Boys and has a barbershop quartet feel to it as well, but with guitar solos and synths. Upon listening to the song, I'm sure it'll become clear that it was recorded during a different era in video game history, as the focus is on arcade games." So he's attached the song, and
let's hear this
video
game.
Let's hear it. This is going to be weird. Nice.
Sweet. Yeah.
I can groove to this.
Sounds like video games.
Yeah.
Gotta get out of this classroom. Can't solve this equation. Our galaxy is threatened by
Yeah, breaking it down with video games. The song's all about you, Jake.
He just wants to play video games, right?
Yeah.
Play my video games. Created by somebody who's never played a video game.
No, man, it's got a hyperspace distorter. Video games. Please. Video games. Yeah.
Oh, shit. Oh, man.
Fuck yeah.
I can't wait to get this in a Rock Band.
Oh, that would be amazing. Rock Band Network.
Open it up.
Is that you playing microphone tambourine?
Yeah, that's microphone tambourine. Yeah.
Yeah, this is like Oingo Boingo if they were even less disconnected or more disconnected from things that they made fun of.
Play
my video games.
Bye.
Video games. Video games.
Video games. Video games. Video games. Did you say I've got an Atari?
I think so.
Video games. Oh shit.
Whoa.
Whoa,
well,
the right
turbo
time.
Video games.
Video games. Less video level.
Games. Yeah. Oh, Mario died. I guess Mario didn't exist yet.
Yeah.
Jumpman was killed.
Yeah, so there's that. Video games. Man.
Mm.
They knew. They knew what it was all about.
Yeah.
It was about borrowing one more quarter.
I guess this guy, sort of segging off of that, Peter here, has a follow-up. Does he think that what role, if any, will traditional arcade gaming play in the 21st century? Is it obsolete as HDTVs and quad-core PCs are becoming the norm? Do you guys have any fond or awful memories of the arcades when you were young?
Also, the turn of phrase HDTVs and quad-core PCs is going to be in the sequel to the song Video Games. I've got so little to do or arcades? Think or say about arcades
We tried to talk about arcades before.
Yeah,
arcades, retro gaming. I don't know what is.
Yeah,
I had minimal exposure to arcades as a kid. Honestly,
yeah.
I believe we've talked about this before, but for me it was Pizza Hut and Chuck E. Cheese occasionally.
For me it was like the movie theater and like my doctor's office. Theater.
Yeah, right.
It seems like at this point arcades have sort of found their niche, and I imagine they'll probably hold on to it for a little while longer, which is just sort of crazy social embarrassment and or show off peripheral games. And the extreme like hardcore fighter guys who still go to arcades just to play that. But I mean, it's not going to be as the Toons describe it in their hit song Video Games. Yeah.
No hyperspace distorters.
That's no.
Yeah.
All right. Is that it?
That's, yeah.
All right. Bye.
Those Star Wars robots that look like a trash can with two legs are called donks.
Are they really?
Yeah, because they say donk.
I didn't know that.
Did you look at the Star Wars characters Wikipedia page?
No, I learned that when they were
making movies. That's actually regular Wikipedia.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I think it was Americ.
No, yeah, I learned that from American Bronze Ring. No, I learned that from Jedi Knight 2.
Mm.
I remember someone from Raven made a forum avatar for some guy on a forum of someone slicing a donk in half, and then they weren't allowed to say that they made it because Lucas Legal would be mad.
That's retarded.
Donk TM.
It was a moderator on that forum whose name was Donk Hater.
Oh, man.
And Raven made him a custom avatar of a donk being eviscerated.
Sweet.
And that's how I learned what a donk was. True story!
I thought you said, and that's who the Lord of the Donk was.
And also, that guy's the Lord of the Donk. Episode title. Yeah. Already.
The Lord of the Donk.
That may have to be it. That's pretty good. The Lord of the Donks.
And that's who the Lord of the Donk was.
And this is Idle Thumbs, episode 47.
And that's who the Lord of the Donk was. And that's
what that whole thing is, the title.
Yes,
it's not just the Lord of the
Dog. I won't do that really, but and that's who the Lord of the Dog was. It's just a lame grammatical catastrophe. This is bullshit.
Okay, on that note, video games.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's who the Lord of the Dog was. It's actually a song about wormholes. We call them space assholes.